The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the beginning of the Holy Gospel according to Matthew.
Glory to you, O Lord.
The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham became the father of Isaac, Isaac the father of Jacob, Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah became the father of Perez and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar. Perez became the father of Hezron, Hezron the father of Ram, Ram the father of Amminadab. Amminadab became the father of Nahshon, Nahshon the father of Salmon, Salmon the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Boaz became the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Obed became the father of Jesse, Jesse the father of David the king. David became the father of Solomon, whose mother had been the wife of Uriah. Solomon became the father of Rehoboam, Rehoboam the father of Abijah, Abijah the father of Asaph. Asaph became the father of Jehoshaphat, Jehoshaphat the father of Joram, Joram the father of Uzziah. Uzziah became the father of Jotham, Jotham the father of Ahaz, Ahaz the father of Hezekiah. Hezekiah became the father of Manasseh, Manasseh the father of Amos, Amos the father of Josiah. Josiah became the father of Jeconiah and his brothers at the time of the Babylonian exile. After the Babylonian exile, Jeconiah became the father of Shealtiel, Shealtiel the father of Zerubbabel, Zerubbabel the father of Abiud, Abiud became the father of Eliakim, Eliakim the father of Azor, Azor the father of Zadok, Zadok became the father of Akim, Akim the father of Eliud, Eliud the father of Eleazar, Eleazar became the father of Mathan, Mathan became the father of Jacob, Jacob the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary. Of her was born Jesus, who is called the Christ. Thus the total number of generations from Abraham to David is 14 generations. From David to the Babylonian exile, 14 generations. From the Babylonian exile to the Christ, 14 generations. The Gospel of the Lord. I still love this passage. And you guys have no idea whether or not I pronounced those names right. I mean, I think that's my greatest joy this morning. And I can have this extended commentary because you guys can't go anywhere. You know, you're snowed in. And that's your own fault for coming out today. So, I like to say, like, the homily is inversely inversely proportional to the length of the gospel. And this is a long one, but also the homily is inversely proportional to the number of people in attendance. So this is a really long homily now, right? But we have those competing influences, and I think they actually weigh each other out. Couple things, okay? One is this. This is where we see the true benefits of a liberal education, because Matthew has given us three sets of 14, which we all know immediately is six sets of seven. Six sets of seven, right? Seven, that beautiful and biblical number of completion. It perks our ears up to hear that number, seven. Where is Jesus then? He's the first in the seventh seven. The first in the seventh seven. So we know how special he is. And I do have to say, it's just point one. Point two. Christianity, I think, is always subversive. It's always subversive. Because we can't seem to build a society on love. We can't seem to build a society on self-giving love, on service, to the point of self-sacrifice for each person. And so when Matthew gives us this list, it's subversive, because off in the distance is Herod, who's building the temple, who's got a half-hearted claim to being Jewish, and doesn't have, is not born of a kingly line. And here's Jesus, who has all of the elements of what it takes to be king of the Jews. So there's that imposter over there. And this guy's the real deal. He is the king of the Jews, the newborn king of the Jews. So we also, we mark this time in Advent, point three, and I think perhaps final point. We mark this time in Advent from December 17th all the way up to, not Christmas Eve, but the morning of the 24th, with really a renewed focus on the birth of Jesus. So we've been focused on his second coming, which I think for us ought to be that ever-present reality that orients who we are as Christians. We know that Jesus is returning and that his kingdom will be firmly and finally implemented, his kingdom of self-giving love, the kingdom that has already outlasted every kingdom of the earth for 2,000 years. And there have been some pretty big and powerful ones. But now we focus on that original coming among us, the incarnation. And I don't know if I was thinking about it in prayer or I was just thinking about it in bed this morning as a way to postpone my getting up. But I thought, I'm just never going to understand the incarnation. I was thinking about God taking flesh in the Annunciation and then God being a fetus, right? And God being a little baby. I just thought, I'm never going to get that. I'm just never going to understand that. But the beautiful thing is we don't have to understand it. It's a reality. It's a reality that we accept and embrace, and it's a reality that we live. This is the God of the universe made himself so vulnerable as to take on human flesh. The God of the universe became so vulnerable as to become a baby. I think for all of us who have a heart, right, to look on a baby, to contemplate the face of a baby, is just something that draws us out of ourselves. It draws us, a baby makes us, again, if we have a heart, a baby makes us give of ourselves, want to defend that life, want to nourish and sustain that. And that's what God did by taking on flesh and being born among us, is that he drew us out of ourselves. He drew us out of ourselves into the praise of his name, that by becoming small, by becoming powerless, we might have power, the power to become sons and daughters of God, and so set about ourselves in building up his kingdom of self-giving love, his kingdom of self-sacrifice, right? His kingdom of justice and righteousness and peace that is based purely on the praise of God. For it's when we praise God that we find that peace for ourselves and become vehicles of that peace to all peoples.